thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
But I do.
Here's John Williams.
Doesn't always work out, though. We'll get to all of that in a little bit. Hi, it's John. I'm so glad you're listening. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue here all the way until 3 o'clock. And then I don't think I come back until Saturday. I believe I have tomorrow off. I knew I had Thursday off and Friday off. Hell, if my producer said, hey, you're not working tomorrow. Sometimes in my business, when people say, hey, you're not working tomorrow, it's because you ain't working. But I think I am coming back on Saturday for my show and then back in the saddle on Monday as we work our way into the holidays. I don't know if it feels like the holidays to you or not. Thanksgiving, for me, seems to have snuck up so quickly. We were so involved in business and my son and now daughter-in-law's. Boy, it's funny to be saying that. Wedding. And it's like, oh, my God, there's Thanksgiving. And then after Thanksgiving comes Christmas. So it's coming lickety-split, and I don't think I'm ready for it at all. We were at Gethsemane Gardens over the weekend. Have you been to Gethsemane Gardens? What a great store. They're not an advertiser now. They should be. They used to advertise here, but they're on Clark Street in North Chicago up by Andersonville, and it's a famous place. Kathy O'Malley used to talk about them a lot. They have some of the biggest, most beautiful Christmas trees I have ever seen. And then a lot of indoor stuff, and it's a really nice, large store. And if you want to get in the Christmas spirit, just stroll through there for a little while. The world backgammon champion, I've been describing him as that, and then he says, well, I'm the international champion from an international tournament that was one of the largest tournaments in the world, but that doesn't make me the world champion because I'm not exactly sure. But he's a really nice guy from Chicago. And so we shot a video with me and him squaring off in backgammon today. And we'll talk about the outcome of that when he gets into the studio. But it'll be fun for you to see us play the game, learn a little of its history when the video goes up, and that'll be soon enough. He's going to swing by and talk to us at 1:30, I think. Todd Stroger, who was formerly the Cook County Board Chair, President, and was on with Ro Khan yesterday, will come into our studio. He used to call into my show all of the time, and I really enjoyed our company and conversation. I was critical of him sometimes. Sometimes he would say stupid things. Sometimes he would do things that you would just kind of scratch your head. But he was always game to come on and visit with us.
He would usually call when you were being critical.
And sometimes he would call. Yeah, he would. Actually, props to him for that. There were other times where he'd call because we were talking about, you know, a TV show, and he just wanted to chime in. So I always appreciated his patronage, his listening to WGN.
Don't say patronage.
But that doesn't give him a pass, does it? So we'll, yeah, no kidding. And that's part of the problem with politics in Chicago. He's going to come into our studio and talk a little bit more about his nascent campaign. Charlie Rose news broke right after our show yesterday, and a friend of mine just texted, oh no, Charlie Rose, and I knew exactly what it meant. It didn't mean he was in a crash. It doesn't mean he suddenly got hit by a meteorite.
You know, I do that with a friend of mine, too. I've done it with a couple of people. Just put such and such on the list.
Yep. The New York Times has a story today about the 30 high-profile men since Harvey Weinstein, starting with Harvey. I asked you and some of our friends, Steve, did you see it coming? And I don't think any of us saw it coming like this. You thought maybe a Bill O'Reilly, maybe a Harvey Weinstein, maybe a politician, maybe a Roy Moore, but I don't think I saw it running as rampant or as deep, that the allegations weren't just, I don't like what he said or did, but what they're accusing these men of. Some of it's just horrible, awful, terrible. And how many women and other people knew about it or must have known about it. It has been endemic. And I go back to that sort of parallel universe thing. I'm walking around mingling with people every day who are living a completely different existence than I am. I'm speaking about the women who know that in their professional world, the rules are completely different. And I don't mean just like, yeah, we know that there's been a glass ceiling for women. I mean, they have to tolerate sexual abuse or sexual harassment up and down the board.
Well, I think with the latest trio is that they're not hard-charging characters.
Glenn Thrush.
Glenn Thrush.
He's on the list.
The newspaper reporter?
You said the latest trio, all right? One of who the trio were.
I didn't know Glenn Thrush. Has he been accused, too?
Sexually inappropriate behavior toward at least four women, including groping and unwanted kissing. I believe he has been suspended as of the last 24 hours by the New York Times. Keep up, Steve.
So I was thinking of Charlie Rose, John Conyers, the senator, the member of the House from Michigan, and
Al Franken.
Al Franken. Yeah. They're all three sort of laconic, you know. They walk around, you know. They're very laid back. They're not the Harvey Weinstein's hard, or you know, Bill O'Reilly's in your face, hard charging sort of. And I don't know if that's why they seemed a little more unlikely.
I had two reactions to the Charlie Rose story, and that was, so then when I found out, I immediately sent a note to Brenda, because when we watch TV in the morning, we watch the CBS Morning News. So we see Gail and Nora and Charlie most mornings. And I think I know him via that, right? So I told Brenda right away. And then I said, you know, I'm so sad. I'm so shocked. I'm taking it personally. I don't know why. Maybe because he's in my living room most mornings. And then I pause and I say, but I'm not surprised, because you look at the pictures, they all look the same. They are all successful. And by that success, rich. And almost exclusively white, and almost exclusively powerful, middle-aged to older men. I mean, you know, he does fit the stereotype that way. In fact, that's what I'm kind of wondering today, Steve, is I wonder what begets all of this. You know, they say power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I wonder if it's just a sort of a function of being that successful, that it makes you think you can get away with it. It's an environment that makes it seem almost okay or acceptable. I don't know. I can't get there. In the nominal public acclaim that I've enjoyed in my life, what success I've had, which is nowhere near, you know, I don't play in that ballpark. But I've never once thought, oh, now I get to demean a colleague.
Well, that's why I wonder if everyone says it's power, but I wonder if sometimes the power is a little overvalued in all of this, because I don't know that they're doing it out of, I mean, some of them clearly are doing it out of power because they can, but I don't know if others are just uncontrollably driven and can't control themselves. I don't know.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, I was listening to Congresswoman Diana DeGette yesterday, who I've talked to a couple times from Colorado, and she named a former congressman in San Diego. And she said, you know, he pinned me in an elevator and tried to kiss me. And she goes, that wasn't power. We were colleagues. He didn't have any power over me, but he behaved that way anyway. And then she went on to say she was at a government dinner and a French diplomat, you know, put his hand on her knee under the table.
Really?
It wasn't a power thing. That was a bad pass sort of thing. I don't know if it's always power. I know it seems to be, or it fits that way.
But if it's not that, then is it some sort of mental illness? Is it like men or women who have a drug or alcohol addiction and they don't want to tell anybody, but it's with them at all the time? That little wheel is always running. I've got to get it.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but I just know that we can't all assign our emotional drives to everyone else, because everyone's is unique. You can't understand the desire or drive that Charlie Rose...
Is that you being sympathetic to...
No, I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that you can't do it. You can't take... All we have is our own experience, and it's just my personal feelings and thoughts can't apply to you, because we have got different brains.
Yeah, but I can't get...
I'm not excusing anything,
I know, because I can't get there from here. I mean, like I said, you called me out at our last remote for embracing...
I didn't call you out. I was trying to help a friend, because I think you didn't realize what you were doing.
Yeah, we aren't kidding. After the last remote at Mickey Finn's in Libertyville, I gave a sideways shoulder hug to some women because the picture wasn't being taken quick enough, and I embraced one of them more firmly and said, that's okay, we all like this or something. I've done that before, and we all giggle. And then they get a nice hug from the man on the radio, a sideways shoulder hug, with my two arms sort of embracing them. And you were resolute about it. You said you cannot do that.
I wish you wouldn't keep bringing this up.
Well, I think it's instructive, because while it's completely different than what we're talking about in the New York Times, on that micro level, I can relate to what I thought were my best intentions potentially being misconstrued. You thought it looked bad.
I thought it was bad. I thought you. It was clear that you had no malice or pervy thought in your mind.
Yeah, it
whatsoever.
Wasn't sexual, that's for sure.
No.
I couldn't tell you who I was doing it to. However,
you don't know how it was going to be received, and it was, you did, you weren't invited to. You gave that
right.
woman a two-armed hug and said, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
And
did I say that?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Something like that. Oh, uh-huh. We all like this.
Yeah, or, okay.
And then you said something like, when I tried to point it out to you, you said, she laughed, and that's what she would do.
Yeah, this is the, right. And now the story sounds like all the rest of them, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
And we wasn't in our world.
Yeah. So, you know, I clearly that moment is different than the moments we're talking about. And somewhere between there and Harvey Weinstein lie a bunch of guys. The people that are profiled in the New York Times are being charged with, like Charlie Rose invites women to his apartment to do work, single women, sometimes much, much younger single women. That's a gigantic red flag, isn't it? But then to me, like if you're a guy out there and you're in a position of power and you're thinking, oh, gee, I think this was reciprocated. I've read the story today and sort of highlighted the men all responded one of three ways. They said either I did it and I feel terrible about it, like Louis C.K., or they categorically deny it, or they say, like Charlie Rose, I now realize that it wasn't mutual, right? But you don't get to play that card if you don't have your clothes on. And the idea that Charlie Rose would find himself without his pants on in the company of somebody else is shocking to me. It's just shocking. So there's Gail Lenora sitting there doing the CBS Morning News. Very interesting how they framed the shot today. I was very interested in what would happen after 7 o'clock when they do their first big local hit. And the two of them, rather than sitting at opposite sides of a triangular-shaped desk, the way the three of them would sit, each of them with a straight-on look at the camera, but they could also be framed together, were both sitting in the same position. Nora, they were both sitting next to each other in Gail. And I just thought that was interesting to get them both in that tight and close a shot. And Charlie, their partner since that show launched, is missing. And then they both gave a little speech. And each of them said that what he's being accused of is unacceptable. We have no place for that, and we will not tolerate that. At no point did either of them say, because maybe Charlie Rose is a bad example of it, that the world is suddenly different for a lot of men and women, that all of the sudden what is and isn't appropriate behavior, and Charlie Rose is not an example of this, but nobody seems to be, and maybe it's too soon for this conversation, but nobody's talking much about what are the rules, where are the lines, what do we make of men who all along were told that that is part of the game, that it was okay, and now all of a sudden it's not. For instance, and again, this isn't Charlie Rose, but I've been wondering how many men are now in the back of their minds playing back incidents going, well, am I going to be next? Am I going to be next? Am I going to be next? And there was Charlie Rose for 3 weeks now, 4 weeks now, doing stories like this, knowing that train is coming and it's coming right for me. That thing is going to come right for me. The same way probably Al Franken. I don't think Al Franken knew it was coming for him. But you got to imagine that Charlie Rose, if any of these charges are true, knew, wow, my career very, very soon is going to end. And here I am doing the Al Franken story. How interesting, how crazy
it's like
is
an Edgar Allan Poe story.
How do you mean by that?
But like the telltale heart that's pounding in the floorboards.
Yeah, I know. I wonder, and don't you wonder locally or nationally, aren't there plenty of other people who are going, wow, this thing is just, I'm next, and you wonder who they are. Suzanne, this is John. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
You were talking about motivation of these guys who do this stuff. And I think you cannot paint like a blanket motivation over these guys, because I think everybody's different. And I think some people are genuinely pigs and do it for power reason. I think some of these guys are socially awkward, and they just don't know how other, you know, when he said he thought he had a connection there, they're just socially, what's socially awkward people. And then there's people that are just stupid drunk. And, you know, whether their inhibitions are way down, but I think alcohol, I bet if you look at a lot of these incidences, alcohol played a role in it.
That's an interesting point. Thank you for the call, Suzanne. Lots of calls, and I want to hear different voices on this. Thanks for joining us. How about Brad? You're on WGN. Brad, what do you want to say?
Well, I don't understand why it's taken so long for all these people to come forward. If that happened to me, and I was a woman, I would be screaming at the top of my lungs. And one other comment I want to make is we have a president of the United States that did the same thing, and no one seems to be going back to that. I know it's not a gouge at the president, but you can't do those actions. You know, you should be held accountable. If I was president, I should be held accountable for those actions. I just think, you know, just because you're in power don't mean you can get away with those things.
That's Brad. Thanks for the call. This is Dan. What did you want to say, Dan? You're on the air.
Yeah. John, do you think game shows are going to have to change the way the host deals with the contestants? Because a lot of times you'll see a male host put his arm around a female contestant's shoulder as a, you know, a sign of, you know, goodwill. And now that could be taken incorrectly by the females. So
I know that sounds silly on the surface, but I don't think if you think about it, it is. Because the conversation that Steve and I were having a moment ago, Brad, or Dan, my body language is here ever after changed. I do not want anybody to misconstrue anything. I ain't going to do that. And so, yeah, maybe that. Remember Richard Dawson when he would be kissing and touching the women? Even then it was gross. You're not doing that on TV now, Jack.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. And number two, do you think the media is going to come back and do a second round of allegations against Donald Trump or highlight them or concentrate that on them?
Thanks for the phone call. I don't know what's going to happen with Donald Trump. I've been a bad predictor of him all along. Do I think the media is going to reexamine that and will something else come up? If I had to bet, I would say, yeah, more likely than not. Do I think that will be consequential to him? I would say no. Ronald Reagan had Teflon. This guy's got kryptonite. I cannot imagine the thing that would bring Donald Trump down. By the way, Bill Clinton was impeached, not for having an affair with Monica Lewinsky, but lying. But I mean, Bill Clinton was impeached for his sins. The Clintons didn't get a pass. They've been humiliated. Their reputation is tarred, and he was impeached. So don't compare, don't look at Bill Clinton when you're looking at Donald Trump and say, well, Clinton got away with something. The Clintons got away with nothing, right? I don't know what's going to happen to Donald Trump, but if you just, and a lot of people are posting this, go back and look at exactly what he said in the Billy Bush tape. It is amazing. It is as bad as anything you are hearing about these days. And that's him saying it. And then to make it all go away, he just says it's locker room talk. And then, oh, well, then I guess it didn't happen. Then it's a fiction. He's admitting that. You have reason to believe that a conduct took place. He's the president of the United States, and he has been getting away with it. And my guess is he will continue to. It's 1:31. The news is next on WGN. I saw an article in the paper the other day, and it said that from Chicago, there's this guy named Carter Pfeiffer Madig, who won some sort of international tournament. He's like one of the best backgammon players in the world, and he lives in Chicago. And he plays regularly up on the north side, as I understand it. We invited him to come into our studio. Hi, Carter. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
Where do you live?
I live in Pilsen now.
And so, where do you guys regularly play?
So we play at the Tilted Kilt in Skokie, and we meet every Tuesday, and then occasionally alternate Sunday tournament every 2 months.
So if it was just an amateur, just a guy who says, I'm pretty good, and they don't know what they're talking through their head, could they play with you guys?
Absolutely, and we encourage that. And actually, we have a lot of players who played for a long time. We love bringing new players into the game.
How did you fall into backgammon?
I was 8 years old. My mom's hairdresser on Oak Street, Secondino's Omar, taught me the game. And I knew it a little bit, and then I'd play with friends.
Your mom would be working, and they'd do this to keep you busy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd keep the kids out of the hair, literally. So
yeah, no kidding. So then you started to take to it. But when did you think, oh, I think there's something to my game. I want to be competitive about it.
So the old tournament director, Bill Davis, 20 years ago, I started in the Bar Point Club, and it's the oldest backgammon club in Chicago, 33 years running constantly. And five of the best players in the world were in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. So if you sat down to play with them, what would your chances be of beating them?
Now? Yeah. They're pretty good. I mean, I play Jake Jacobs, I play David Wells, I play two have passed, but yeah, I can hold my own, so
yeah,
it's
no
nice.
Kidding. But when you play backgammon, and I don't want to get into the rules here, but you know, you line these guys up on these funny long triangles, and mm-hmm. you roll the dice, and the idea is essentially to move your people around the board and then stack them all on the other side.
Right.
And if any of your people are exposed, if you have one that's sitting there by himself and the other guy lands on it, then you got to go back to go and start all over again. That's backgammon.
Right.
But so much of that is dependent upon the roll of the die, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I would think that an amateur like me could, if I got hot, beat you, and you're one of the best players in the world.
You absolutely could. The whole thing is the more that you play, the more variance goes down, the luck starts dropping and the skill goes up.
Yeah.
So I won the largest tournament player, but according to XG ratings, which rates your plays, there are players way stronger than me.
Right. So on backgammon, you were kind of explaining this off the air. Let me see if I got it right. That is, whatever your die roll is, there is mathematically the most optimal move. Mm-hmm. And the computer knows that, and us humans don't always.
Right.
So as you make the move, the computer's ranking your moves, going, was that the best move? Was that the perfect play?
Right.
The idea would be to mimic the computer as much as possible, right?
Well, that's the idea for a lot of players. I don't particularly like playing like that. And I think a lot of people, that's what's turned some people off to backgammon, is that this whole computer, like, people just study and study. Backgammon's not fair. I mean, we played a little earlier, and you see, like, you can roll double six twice, three times. It's not fair, but that's backgammon. That's the beauty of it. So people who keep trying to emulate the computer, they get to a point where they don't know what the computer is going to do.
And the computer doesn't know if that other guy's sweating a little bit. Maybe I've intimidated him because I wore a crown.
That's
and came
true.
In with a cereal box with my picture on it or something like that.
Right. I was able to muster up the courage to finish the game, which is important.
He walks in with this glowing trophy of glass and metal with fancy etchings from his international tournament, and I had a cereal box with my picture posted on the front. So I guess if we were talking smack, you won that part of the game. But then when we played, mm-hmm. I was crushing you. I was going to, what is it called, double gammon you, or I was going to backgammon you.
Do you have any evidence of that? I mean, because that wasn't when the tape was rolling, which was nice.
So our guy is videotaping this, and he goes, and as I was wrapping you up, he goes, okay, I'm ready.
Which was perfect, which was literally perfect.
So then we roll tape, and then you proceed to destroy me.
Yeah.
And I was making some bad moves as we played. And I was a little nervous and I'm a little rusty. And then you'd point something out to me and I go, I know that. I know that if I got on my game, I would not have made the mistakes I was making.
For sure. I'm sure you would.
Yeah. But you're pretty confident that just given your superior play, you would be able to beat me. You told me also that backgammon is or isn't like chess. I mean, it goes back to ancient times, right?
Right. So chess, what happened was, like, rulers of countries, chess was a very popular game, but some people just aren't good at chess.
Well,
some people
right.
can't study, so they invented a variant, like, which is backgammon. It's a completely different game strategy wise, but they invented this so, like, you could just be unlucky. So, which is a lot, probably saves a lot of people from being beheaded in the kingdom.
Because if you beat the king in a game of chess, he's angry. And you probably could every single time if you're a superior chess player.
Correct.
Backgammon, the king could get lucky.
Right.
Hey, the king won. Hey, what do you know? The king beat the guy.
Right.
Or the king loses, and everybody knows that was just because the king had unlucky rolls.
Exactly.
So he's able to save face.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of evolution of chess, or of backgammon.
I believe so.
What a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you make money when you win a tournament?
It depends on the tournament. So usually you're offsetting costs, travel costs, stuff like that. Certain tournaments are, you know, more lucrative than others.
How much did you win for this international whiz bang?
So what happens is that you get the prize pool, but then you have hedges and things like. So I worked out deals with people before I played. I ended up hedging 15% with one of the English players, and then as you get closer to the money round, you're hedging.
Hedging meaning if I don't if I win, I'll give you some of the winnings?
Right. So you're almost betting against yourself.
It's insurance.
But yeah, exactly, because you don't want to go this far. So many people have bubble-rounded. And
so they give you money to cover you a little bit, but then if you win, you got to pay them off.
Right.
They're betting on you.
Right.
And then you win the whole damn thing, and you go, shoot, I shouldn't have done that. I would have got to keep all the cash.
Yeah, you feel okay about it. It's just, I mean,
you're not in it for the money.
No, not at all. I mean, it would be nice if it grew to a point where, like poker, a lot of the backgammon players.
Think about it.
So if you see like Gus Hansen and these really strong Danish poker players, they're all backgammon players, but they just switched to poker because poker's easier math
is it growing? It's
a lot more cash.
Is backgammon growing?
It is. This tournament that I just won is the largest one in the world, and every year it's grown exponentially. So, and it's in North Cyprus, and it's the Merritt Park Casinos. Arda is one of the best tournament directors, and it's a great value. Take
ESPN
the family.
ESPN does poker, and I've never understood. And at first, I thought, you've got to be kidding me. This is the death of ESPN. Have they no shame? They're putting poker on ESPN. It's not a sport. It's a card game. Then you kind of watch and go, he's got a couple of aces. You know, you kind of get into
right.
it. The real mystery to me was that when they would then show reruns of tournaments, because part of the intrigue is like who's going to win and stuff like that. My sons and I found ourselves watching. We knew what was going to happen.
Right.
You're watching a rerun of a poker game. Shame on us. I would like to see ESPN or somebody like that.
On the Ocho or something.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not ESPN
right.
1, but maybe
right.
ESPN 6. You guys get some exposure because I really enjoyed playing against you today.
Well, if you look on like YouTube, you can find the World Series of Backgammon. And there were Andy Bell did some amazing videos, and I actually did commentary for some of them.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not.
It exists.
It exists.
What do I search for?
Just put in WSOB Backgammon, and you'll find it.
World Series of Backgammon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're the color guy?
I'm the color guy. I'm the color guy. John Clark is one of the announcers. Kira Scott, who's one of the big poker announcers, that's how she started, was actually doing backgammon commentary.
It's 1:48. Okay, so let's pause here and just give us the score when we come back of your backgammon match with me. We did a video.
Right.
When we come back, we did a video also, and we'll post that later today or tomorrow or the next day so that you kind of get a chance to meet you online and also learn a bit more about the game here in Chicago. It's 1:49. This is WGN. Carter is, what do you go by? National champ? International champ? I mean, what sort of...
Oh, international champion for sure.
Seriously,
yeah.
What is
it? No, for sure. That's it. No.
You do that.
Well, because the world championships are a smaller field. So there is an actual world championships in Monte Carlo. They play every year in July, August.
Yeah.
And but the field is only usually anywhere from 120 to 160.
And how many were in your tournament?
390.
390. Carter, Pfeiffer, Matic.
Yep.
So we were just kind of kidding off the air, but it was true. I was crushing you when we were playing before the camera rolled.
Yes, if that's what you need, John. Absolutely, yes.
Do you think you could have won that game? Because we quit before.
I don't
know.
If I got a 5 to anchor, possibly. So you never know. That's the joy of backgammon is you're really not out of it until the very end.
That is the nice thing, isn't it? Because like if you're pinned in chess, you know you have no hope. But you can actually get some good rolls. Your opponent can get some bad rolls. And if you just know the right moves to make, when all seems to be lost, you can still win in backgammon.
Yeah, that televised game, the first one that we played on, you were winning that game. And then just things, you didn't get out and things went south.
A couple of bad moves didn't help. So we played 3 matches then afterwards, and you won all of them.
Yeah, well, that was expected.
So are you a married fella? You got
kids? I am ridiculously happily married. Yeah. So her name is Christina. She's amazingly hot, funny, my protector. She's awesome.
The reason I ask is I wonder, since you're not making money playing the tournaments.
Oh, being supported? Am I a kept man? Is that what you're saying?
How do you make a living?
So I'm also a sound engineer. I do work for Pro Musica. And so I design high-end systems.
For things. Businesses and homes?
Well, mostly for audiophiles.
Really? So audiophiles meaning a home. If I had a nice small place and
exactly.
I wanted a really monster system,
right?
You would be the guy that came in
well,
and said,
not monster,
you need this.
But you have to, you know, something that you really enjoy. Like we'll determine what your hearing is like because everyone's hearing is different. We'll figure out what you really enjoy and then we'll tailor something for it.
Huh. So you're able to do that and yet still travel the world and mm-hmm. play in these tournaments.
Yeah.
So when's the next one that you're going to?
I go to L.A. next, and then my daughter's out there. She's going to college out there. So I'm going to see her, and we play in doubles, and we've won the doubles 3 times.
You and your daughter?
Mm-hmm.
What a nice thing. Yeah. So she shares your enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah. It. And her trash talk is way stronger than mine, so it's pretty amazing.
Which makes me better than mine, too, by the way.
Right.
We've made a video of our match today so that you can, A, see how the game works, and B, get to know our guest, and then C, maybe get involved locally. The website to go to if you want to just find out more, follow the local scene, is what again?
Oh, it's ChicagoBarPoint.com.
Chicago Bar. What does that mean, Chicago Bar
Point? So that was the club, is the Chicago Bar Point. And you can look it up. It's also, it's Tilted Kilt. It's going to be on Tuesdays in Skokie on Carpenter Road. And then, the next international tournament is Dubrovnik, the same people, Merritt Park, who did my tournament that I just won in North Cyprus. They're doing Dubrovnik, so a bunch of Americans are going out and trying to keep the title for America. So.
What an honor it is and privilege, and how nice it is to meet somebody who's the best in the world at something. And Carter, that's you. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Oh, my God, my ego just can't take this.
I think it can. It's 1:57. The video will be up soon, and let's meet again. We'll meet up there at the Tilted Kilt, or the club where you guys play.
Sure.
And I will have polished my game off a little more.
Or you can come in April, my 50th birthday. You can come to Acres Dispensary, and we're all celebrating backgammon players and sound engineers and punk rockers from Exit, and it'll be a huge party in Vegas April 11th.
Yeah, I'm going to be there for that. Okay, well, I think I'll see you north instead of west.
Sounds good.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
All right, let's do this. Act 208. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I'm John Williams. I'm also on Saturdays. I hope you listen to us on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon. And I'm part of a podcast with Steve Bertrand. We call it The Mincing Rascals. Where do you get your podcasts? Make sure that you download and listen to The Mincing Rascals, where we talk about state politics, city politics, and national politics. And you know what that means these days. Speaking of which, Todd Stroger is in our studio. He used to visit with us often on my show during my last run here.
It's like the Wayback Machine.
It kind of is. Todd, nice to see you in the studio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You were on with our Rokan yesterday on the phone, and I appreciate you making time for 2 interviews here at WGN. Last we used to speak, you were the president of the Cook County Board. You're running again.
Yes, I am. And as you stated before we came on, I might be a little insane, but... this is what I enjoy. I enjoy government. Government is, as my dad would always say, government is there to help people. I enjoy helping people, and you can't do it at any level bigger than being the president of the county board.
What I said to you off the air was that I think the only thing crazier than running for the office is sometimes, or worse, is winning the office. And then I said, I feel that way about mayor. I feel that way about governor. I probably feel that way about the job you're running for. I mean, it just strikes me as being thankless. It doesn't pay enough.
It definitely can be thankless at times. The pay, it's okay. I'll take that. But it's the only problem it has compared to the other jobs you talked about is it deals with things that people generally don't care about unless there's trouble, health care and public safety. So most of the public is not going to the court system or going to county health system.
If they do, then they come in contact with the county, and those are the services that you would be in charge of, that you were in charge of.
That's correct.
Yeah. When you look back at your first tenure as Cook County Board President, what do you think you did especially well? What do you think you did not do well that you'd like another shot at?
Well, I believe what I did well was I was very good financially. We made sure that the county was in the black. If you remember when I first came in, I'd made a promise that we were going to balance the budget without any taxes the first year. So we looked at it. It was $500 million deficit.
Half a billion,
yes. And we were able to do what I said. We covered the budget. We went into the next year, and then we come up with another $238 million deficit, and we had to have some kind of relief to keep the county going, and that's when we did the sales tax. Also, we had a great credit rating. You know, we were A+, best in the state. You wouldn't find a large government with that. The minuses, part of that is, first, never follow someone who is larger than life and bigger than you. So Gene Sawyer followed Harold Washington, didn't work out. I followed my father, that didn't work out. The scrutiny is incredible.
So you were held to a high standard. That was your father.
Right. And he was a great man, let me tell you. But also, you know, there were other things. I should have been out in the streets more. You know, when I got there, I was like, I'm going to get in that office. I'm going to run it like nobody's seen it. This is going to be like a fine-tuned engine. But in politics, you have to be out and talking to people and shaking their hands and letting them know exactly what you're doing, because they're always wondering what's really going on inside that building.
When you were on yesterday with Roe, you guys got into a kind of back and forth about some of the expenditures that the county would make and were they necessary and justified and were the contracts let to the right people. And under a certain threshold, I think it's $25,000.
It's probably changed, but at that time it was $25,000.
Contracts maybe were being let that should not have or should have been more competitively let. You don't have any regrets about the way those have
You know what I've learned is when people are against you, they can pick things up and they'll say, you know what, you shouldn't have done that to that guy because I don't like that guy. No, those contracts were let that way only because the money was not large enough to attract a larger organization. No one wanted to do what we needed to be done for $150,000. So we had to cut them up into smaller chunks and find promoters who were used to going out in the streets and trying to get people to do something.
And you think
don't
criticism
want.
Of the way those were doled out is unfair?
I think it shows some naivety. It's because you don't understand the system. You don't understand how we have to get to this place. When you're looking from the outside, sometimes you're like, well, how come you just don't do this? Unfortunately, the world's not as simple as it appears when you're looking from the outside.
Do you remember the first criticism of you, the first big public blow-up?
Yes, I can tell you exactly.
Tell me what I'm thinking of.
Carter probably remembers it, too. It was my security team who had taken security training with the state had decided that, like all the other elected officials, the mayor and the governor, that my elevator, I take that back, that
See,
the elevator in the county should be stopped for 10 minutes as I got there, and I'd go straight up, and there would be no one on the elevator for 10 minutes. That became a headline story.
And that did happen, though, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But, you know, that's security, and they want to take care of it.
So the story was that Todd Strojer has a bank of elevator, an elevator shaft, a whole elevator for that building, closed off for his personal use. That was true when you were coming and going, right?
Only when I came, and the elevator was stopped for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, somehow, they forgot that the mayor has an elevator that's dark until he steps on it. But I didn't really need the elevator.
What happened then? Did that policy stay in place for your entire time, or did you eventually say, no, I'll wait with everybody?
As soon as the story started, I was like, I don't need an elevator. I don't care. I've been taking these elevators all my life. But you know how stories are. Once they're out, they're out.
Yeah, but you were also intimating with Roe yesterday that it's yellow journalism. The media doesn't report things fairly or accurately.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
And do you still feel that way about the media in this city today?
The media, unfortunately, has some bias to it. And
what's the bias relative to the county board presidency?
Oh, it's a personal bias.
It's not the office. It's
not
you.
The office.
And what's
itself.
The bias against you?
I think the bias was that I was able to step into in a way my father's shoes, and run for an office that he had had.
It was almost bequeathed to you.
I wouldn't say that because to be honest with you, John, you couldn't find very many people, and when I say very many, I mean like a handful of people who had the credentials I had. I mean, if you can find somebody who'd been in the state legislature and had been the chairman of local government, had been the chairman of labor, had been a city councilman, had been in a municipal banker for 7 years, I don't think you're going to find too many people like that.
So do you think if your name hadn't been Strojer, you still would have won those offices or become the president of the Cook County Board?
I'll put it this way. If my name hadn't been Strojer, I wouldn't have been in the newspaper on the front page so often. I can literally say, and I'm very confident in this, that I was on at least the Sun-Times cover more than anybody. And when I say anybody, I mean the worst of people from Hitler on down.
And I don't have an explanation for that, but I'm part of the media, and I don't understand why people think that it would behoove them to have a bias against you. I don't believe there were meetings where they said, "Let's get Todd Stroger." I do believe.
I will tell you this, John, this is in all honesty, that the newspaper people who were their beat was the county, and if you go to the county now, there's like one person. When I was there, everybody was there. But the beat people literally came to me and they said, "Look, I know I wrote an article and we talked, and the article's actually different than what we talked about, but I don't have control over that.
Somebody edited it to make it look worse."
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I think life is like that, and I understand that sometimes you can't win every battle.
But would you also allow, though, Todd, that with the elevator or with a couple of phrases that you turned incorrectly, people then sort of seized on you as being either incompetent or sometimes getting in your own way, and that became a narrative that you started, that was your own baby?
No, I will tell you what, because, you know, John, I've been here all my life. I've seen all kind of politicians. I've seen guys that you know, and I'm not going to name them, who could barely say three sentences very well. And no man is perfect. I think you know the old saying that there's a guy in Caesar's ear telling him that he's just a man. I understand that. I understand I'm not perfect. But if everything you do becomes a front page story, you can't survive. There's no one who could survive that.
So do you think you can survive your own bad press from the past? I mean, you've not only got to convince voters that you've got a good plan, which I haven't heard much about yet. I'll ask you in a second. But you've also got to convince them that they're not that person that the Sun-Times used to write about.
That is that exactly right. I think part of the journey is that, no, I wasn't running a bad ship. I think a lot of people, and literally people have stopped me and told me this for the last 7 years. You had the county in great financial shape. She had to come back and do what you did. And because of that, the county's not in great shape now.
You're talking about Tony Preckwinkle?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you've been critical. I mean, I do want to ask you a couple of questions about the sweet beverage tax, about the office today, and some of the things that you specifically would do. You got another minute?
For you, yes.
You haven't called in on my show since I came back. I've been here since June. I know it's just November, but I
didn't want to try to monopolize your time and feel like I was getting free press or anything.
You will get free press if you call in here. So, Todd, what would your vote have been on the sweet beverage tax?
Oh, I would have voted no. John, I could see from the beginning that the tax... Well, let me go back and say this. The reason I was for the sales tax was two things.
The original sales tax that you imposed in your first term.
Correct. We had gotten a report done that said that the county needed to make some changes in the everyday running of the county, but it also needed some revenue, and that the sales tax was the smartest way to go. And the sales tax compared to taxes like the sweetened beverage tax, the sales tax actually affected everybody. And I know some progressives are like, well, everybody shouldn't pay things. But, you know, if we don't get everybody in this game, and if everyone doesn't have a stake, then why would they care about it? But the sweetened beverage tax, besides being an enormous tax, I mean, I've seen some bills where the tax was $1.79 and the bill was $4.99. So It made no sense. It didn't actually. It wouldn't do what it was purporting to do, which is save people from obesity and diabetes. I think that there would be a better way to go about trying to combat that.
Obesity and diabetes, but what about the financial component of it? So then, what do you do to make up for the lost money that the sweet beverage tax won't be bringing in?
That's what the president's supposed to figure out.
Yeah. What would your recommendation be?
Oh, shoot. I'd have to get in the weeds. And to be honest, I haven't.
You don't have an answer to that?
I haven't looked at the budget to say.
You're running for president of Cook County Board and you don't know how you would.
Well, that's going to be. No, that's going to be done before I get there. Yeah. I'm not going to look back and second guess what they did in the past. but I will work hard to make sure that things are run well in the future.
Would you be, if you were running the county, would you be more inclined to cut services, or would you be more inclined to raise revenue?
Well, let me tell you what I know about the county. In the county, every department has something that you could take out. Like I said earlier, it won't affect everyone. Let's take the state's attorney's office. The state's attorney's office has a department that deals with victims of crimes. They contact them. They try to help them get to from A to B. But it's not the core mission of the state's attorney. You could take that out. That's going to affect a certain amount of people. Do we think it's important enough to keep? I don't know. But even if we do take that out, it's still going to be a small number. What I think needs to be done is I think that we need the mayor and the county board president and everyone else to start talking to the state about putting some real revenue and being part of this this mix.
You know, You're going to petition the state of Illinois to give the county more money?
I think they should give all the municipalities and counties more money. I think
you know what the state's financial situation is.
They're terrible.
Yeah.
But what they need to do is they need to start looking at things like marijuana and legalizing marijuana.
You're on board that? They're talking about that now.
I am totally on board with that.
That's not going to happen anytime soon. We've got to change the law first. But you would
well, that's my
that.
Problem with them. They are not doing anything.
I believe Tony Preckwinkle is endorsing that. At least.
Oh, I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about the state. The state's not doing anything. We have to get them. Get them to that place.
My point is I don't think that distinguishes you from the person that holds that office right now, but you would also endorse the idea of legalizing marijuana. You don't think that would, I don't know, create more of a drug or more of a crime problem or something? I don't know what the consequences of that would be.
I don't think we see that in the states that have done it, like Colorado, I believe it is.
Do you have other specific things that, as you're launching this campaign, you want people to know about, you know, your ideas either for the state's attorney's office or fire or police or the finances? I mean, the criticism I'm hearing about your campaign as you roll it out, Todd, is that we're not hearing enough specifics.
Well, I would ask you, who has specifics at this point? You tell me, does Tony Preckwinkle have specifics of what's going to happen next year? Does Bob Fioretti?
Well, she has a budget. I mean, she's obviously in the game. She's dealing with it on a daily basis.
Right, and I'm not. So just like everyone after they're elected.
Okay, but then why should I vote for you?
Well, let me tell you. So just like everyone after they're elected, they get to go in the budget and tell you what's in there and what should be done. When Tony Preckwinkle ran against me, she didn't come up with any great ideas of what she was going to do. The only thing she said, she was going to roll back the sales tax, right? Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right about that.
And she did, right?
And then what happened?
And then all hell broke loose.
No, and then we got the tax. You said that she was dishonest about that.
Oh, she obviously was. I can tell you, John.
I didn't see
first,
it that way. It
when we first
like...
started running, she would say, Todd Strolger has made some tough choices, but he's the wrong man for the job. And I would say 3 weeks in, her tone totally changed, and Todd Strolger is the worst administrator I've ever seen. And she's literally said that for like the last 7 years. But that was before she became the president. She never knew what the county was really like. And John, after getting to a office like county board president, you can't really make any real decisions until you get in there and you see what's going on.
What do you handicap your chances, Todd?
Well, John, I think I'm on the same level as everyone else. But you know what I have that they don't have? Is I actually ran the county and it ran well. We were in the black. We had a great credit rating. I don't see that out of the other candidates. I could be wrong, but you'll have to tell me how I'm wrong in this.
Todd Strolger is running for Cook County Board President. Nice to have you in our studio again, Todd.
Thank you.
One way or another, we're going to be talking. Good luck to you on the campaign.
I appreciate it.
Have you been following this story? Crane's Chicago Business is pulling the plug on the website comment section because it's getting out of hand.
Yeah, I had a comment there. I couldn't take it.
It's getting out of hand everywhere. Michael Arndt is on the phone, and he joins us now on WGN. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, and how are you?
Good. Editor at Crane's Chicago. Why did the publication decide to do this?
Well, it was a long time coming, and believe believe me, we tried mightily to maintain comments. And the hard part was almost inevitably when there was a controversial story or sometimes even just a non-controversial story, the conversations in our comments section would devolve and devolve very quickly into very nasty comments, racist, anti-Semitic, anti-woman. And we were left with the choice of trying to police this, or the alternative was to, as we borrowed a phrase, to drain the swamp. We chose to drain the swamp.
So you could have policed it by saying every time you saw something that was inappropriate, editing it out, right?
And that's what we had been doing for the last years that we've maintained our comments section. This takes a lot of work, and it was manpower and womanpower that we simply don't have.
And I'm reading about this online today. That is, a bunch of people are tweeting in support of and against what you've decided to do. And the criticism was that it's not that it can't be done. It's just a matter of resources. Shame on Cranes for not committing the resources.
Well, shame on our readers for not paying us enough money to support those resources.
Yeah. I please don't think that I'm personally being critical of your decision, because I think it's a dilemma we all face, and I don't envy you for having to make the decision like this.
Well, I should remind your listeners and our readers that we have not turned a deaf ear to comments, as we mentioned in our post on our site. And in conversations we've had with readers, we encourage them to take to the social media world with their comments, share our stories, praise them, damn them, whatever they would like.
On Facebook or someplace else.
Or Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or Instagram or, you know, there are countless sites. We do publish letters to the editor. We also do encourage people simply to email us and let us know what they think.
Why, you know, it's funny to me that I could see some publications with a broad enough swath of readers that would draw in all sorts of snarky comments. But my image of Cranes is that it's a little more refined, a little more intelligent, a little more dignified than this wouldn't happen.
I'm glad you think that, and believe me, most of our readers are those people you just described. The people who are generally polluting our site with the comments that we found and many of our other readers and our readers found as offensive are not generally our regular readers. They're professional trolls. They seek out sites with keywords.
Really?
And just go there. Yes. And they'll move from one site to another and just leave a string of commentary. I should also say one of the reasons why this has taken so much work for us is that the comment platform allows readers to post under pseudonyms or anonymously. If we had a setup like Facebook where you have to post under your own name, I think fewer people would be speaking or writing.
If you had to post a picture, disregard an ID. Yeah.
But they can post anonymously. We had a commenter pretending to be masquerading as Bruce Rauner for several weeks before we caught on to him and were able to ban him. Then he objected that we banned him.
So you could one by one whack-a-mole these things out, but it's
right.
Just too expensive and time-consuming. And you must also be weighing the value of those comment sections anyway. My suspicion is, Michael, that if you really thought it was adding a lot, that you would have committed the resources to it.
Well, yes. If that commentary really were as respectful and as thoughtful as we hoped it would be, but one thing that often happened in past tense now, is that the commentary might start out with that sort of tone and then devolve, and once it reaches the point of name-calling, people with a little bit more sensibility just pull out and go away.
Yeah.
And I must say that our readers in general would come up to me and say, "Who are your readers? I'm one of your readers. I can't believe that your readers include people who post comments like these. Those aren't. Why would I want to be associated with those folks?"
This isn't that, but it just reminds me of what I went through when I posted on my Facebook page for this radio station last week, a petition to my listeners to support the Salvation Army. I have a virtual kettle. And the first three comments were angry, rude things about the Salvation Army's organizational beliefs.
That's really sad.
And I'm like, I know that they don't all have the same views as everybody else, but we're all different people. Can't we help support them and raise money for this good cause? And now it just becomes this back and forth about the Salvation Army's beliefs on certain things. And I'm like, guys, this is not why I put up the kettle.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. This really wasn't an issue until we in the media started asking and soliciting comments on our sites. You know, a newspaper publishes letters to the editor, but it chooses which letters to publish. It can completely ignore the crackpot letters. TV and radio allow in certain call-in shows like yours, but again, you're choosing who to allow in. It's really only on websites where it's this free-for-all and where people think they have a right to come in and say whatever they want on whoever's site.
Michael Arndt is the editor at Crain's Chicago. Anything else I can do for you today, Michael?
Keep reading Crain's.
I agree. Listen, you know, that I set you up for that, but I really think that now more than ever, we need to support journalism and local journalism. And that means not only subscribe digitally or to paper productions, but to patronize the sponsor of those places. We don't know about Harvey Weinstein and everything that's happened since, but for solid journalism. We don't have the information that's empowering us these days, but for journalism. Now more than ever, support journalism. I'm completely with you on that, my friend.
Amen.
All right, Michael, stay well.
Thanks for having me.
It's coming up on the Rokan and a Devlantis experience.
Well, quite a bit. And Cam Meredith is here. He's in the green room. We're just hanging out with him.
Chicago Bear.
Yeah, we're fearing the bird right there. I did the full, Kevin, I did like the fanboy thing.
I did.
I go, fear the bird.
Is he an ISU guy?
Yeah. He's an ISU guy.
Well, hold on. Let me put
just
it
ask
up,
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, do you know this guy personally?
I don't know him personally, but he was absolutely part of maybe the best football team ever at Illinois State. They went to the national championship game. Then Carson Wentz broke all of our hearts in the national title game. Bears will play him on Sunday. But Cam Meredith was unstoppable that year for the Redbirds. He was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And now he's got an organic sports drink, so we'll be able to taste that. And Cray. It's called Cray. So we'll check that out.
And it is Cray.
It's Cray.
Tuesdays with Brendan, the alderman, will be here. And we'll be promoting the fact that a week from Friday, we're doing the Big Toys for Tots drop right here.
Oh, very
in front
nice.
Of the station on Pioneer Court.
Good to hear that.
And Jeffrey Bear will be here. You know, the guy from Channel 11 who always, you know, he finds a statue somewhere in a neighborhood in Chicago he didn't know existed. And like, look at that! You're like, wow!
Makes you appreciate our city.
He does. He's the
Jeffrey.
Best thing ever happened to this town.
They're putting up a Mike Ditka statue. I just saw that somewhere today.
There's a Dick Butkus one going
no,
up.
No, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Dick Butkus is going up.
I'm getting every possible detail wrong at the end of the show today. It's the Dick Butkus one.
You and I.
They're different, right? Dick Butkus. And it wasn't in Chicago.
Sort
it's
of,
in Champaign, right?
The same that's mustache, right. though. They shared a mustache for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
some
that.
Thread there.
Yeah. So all that's got that's all coming your way in the first 2 hours. Of course, Tom Skilling will get us ready. Hey, this is one of the most important Tom Skilling reports of the year. It's the Thanksgiving. What's, you know, to grandmother's house we go for tomorrow. And Thursday, a lot of people that tonight, as you're going to hear in Violetta's traffic, you're going to hear tonight is a crazy night on the roads because people are getting out. They take tomorrow off, so they're in position.
So Wednesday you think is worse than Thursday, or Tuesday night is worse than
Tuesday night is worse than Wednesday night, they say.
Hey, by the way, Violetta, where's that place I was talking about just a minute ago?
South LaGrange Road and 151st Street, right next to Orland Square Mall.
Yeah.
Like I said, Orland Park.
I think you said LaGrange.
I said I had an Oak Lawn. I had it everywhere. So.
Sure, it's not Champagne. By the Dick Butkus statue.
By the Mike Butkus statue. We got it. Listen, I had one of those days yesterday, and I'd taken 2 days off. And I was hitting all the wrong buttons, and then I would just stop, and I go, where am I?
I know.
Yeah, it happens. It's like, I don't know. This time of year, people, you know, this is a job like any other job, right? And people, like, you kind of lose a little focus.
Todd Stroger was in the studio. This is his fault.
He was mad at me yesterday.
I went back and listened to your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think you were unfair to him. I didn't think he has any reason to be mad at you. I thought you were reasonable.
I have a theory on this whole thing now.
What's that?
He's a he's out there right now, and I'll say it right to his face. He's a plant. He's just there to fundraise for another candidate to be the, you know, to be up there for a little bit and then to drop out.
He's a decoy?
Decoy, yeah.
Really?
That kind of stuff happens in this town all the time.
And then who's he then going to switch his allegiance to and raise money for?
I don't know which one it is. I haven't figured it out yet, but he's a stalking horse for somebody. He's got to be.
You think?
Because he can't
knows?
Run on his record.
Well, that's the thing. He's got to figure out how to answer his record. In every interview.
He said they were in the black when he was in the office. Hmm. They were in the black, he said.
Yeah, because they had a bit, but they repealed as very, very unpopular, you know, for that period of time, for that window that they had that increased point coming in of sales tax in Cook County. But then they repealed it, and then, you know, all the trouble in the world. The question is, what do you cut? And he can't really answer to the 24/9 contracts, because it was just, you know, scandal after scandal after scandal. And he says, we don't understand, because those were legitimate $24,900 contracts for people who really needed to do things in outreach. And I'm like, really? Really?
Really? They all happen to be $100 short of the $25,000, which would allow taxpayer scrutiny.
Right, 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 yeah. Right.
Yeah. That rap group, though, was great.
Mm-hmm. They are great.
24/9?
Yeah. Yeah, the Dude Nam, who did the McDonald's song, they got a 24/9 contract, too, to give us a census song. I never heard the census song.
I'm out of your way.